Hi, Jimmy. I think we're recording now. Okay. All right.
Hey, wonderful.
This technology stuff is so, it's so fun.
You're the expert.
I'm just faking it, man. So, how's your day been so far?
Full of chores, and a little bit of online work.
Did you do any laundry today? How did the laundry go?
Oh, yes. Everything was done.
Really?
And everything is put away, and order has been restored.
You're so domestic over there.
Yes, on a Sunday especially. You're domestic. You're back home in your hometown.
I am. I went out to dinner with the parents and some friends tonight, and we had a very nice time. Everybody behaves themselves these days. It's funny how that works. But
well, I have an issue to get us off the mark.
Okay, let's get off the mark.
Something I want to ask you about that happened this week in, what is this, our fifth or sixth podcast?
No, Jay, I think this is our fourth podcast, actually. I know it seems like a lot longer. I believe this is the fourth, yeah.
Hmm. All right, I think it's the fifth.
What happened
this week with the Associated Press really interested me. They did a lot of noise-making and created quite a few headlines, and the chairman of the Associated Press said, we're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore. And, but no one could really figure out what it was that they were going to do. And I just wondered what you made of all that and what you were thinking as you were watching these headlines crawl across your screen.
Well, I did actually come to some conclusions about that. I've actually know a number of the people, top people at the Associated Press, and I've worked with them on a number of projects, and I think highly of them, unlike many of my colleagues in the tech business. And I was puzzled, of course. I think part of it was they're reacting to the, you know, what probably is not a very good financial picture for them. And, you know, looking at it and saying, well, we need to change something here, and not finding a whole lot that they can change. So they just made a big statement about how they're going to change things in a very big way without actually saying what it was that they were going to do. I think this is sort of part of the problem with the way the publishing and journalism or news industry approaches this situation. They sort of look for a big bang, a way to, you know, all of a sudden, boom, we're going to figure this out and we're going to change everything. And all of a sudden, this stuff that isn't working now is going to start working. And it doesn't work that way. You know, this kind of a shift, I've never seen it happen where one idea comes along and all of a sudden things that weren't working before start working. So I think it's born of frustration, Jay. I think that's basically what you're seeing.
Born of frustration and possibly, I felt, overestimating the uniqueness of their product.
Well, is it unique or not?
Well, that's what they think it's unique and uniquely authoritative, and I'm not sure that that is often true.
Yeah. Well, here's another thing to think about. I think that the really great news application for the internet is yet to be invented. And, you know, and so what would that look like? I think we're, you know, I think that's what we're trying to do with this series of podcasts, or at least what I hope we'll do, is see what, you know, are some of the components of that, and maybe how the pieces fit together.
You had an idea for what you called sort of the ultimate user interface, and I wanted to ask you about that and what you were thinking there, because I didn't quite understand it.
No, see, that was a misunderstanding. I wasn't talking. I wrote that piece. Now I don't remember what. I did say that somewhere in there was this idea of an ultimate user interface, but I don't know what it looks like. We're going to iterate to that, okay? But I think that they're in a unique position that I think that if they were to sort of take a step back, okay, and say, okay, we love news. Let's start right there, okay? We love news, and we, number one. Number two, we see the potential of the internet as a means for delivering the news. And then number three, that we believe that the potential of that medium has yet to even, has not been realized, and now this is Dave talking. I don't think we've really begun to scratch the surface. If you look at the home pages of the major news organizations, you'll see that they more or less emulate the print publication of the past, you know, with a publication period of a day. You know, they recycle all the news on the homepage once a day, and they arrange things in sections. And if you ever wanted to go to, say, the homepage of CNN or the New York Times or the LA Times or whatever, and find out what's new, which to me is what the definition of news is, you would be very hard-pressed to find out what's new. You would find out what happened in the last 24 hours, but that's not why you're going there. I mean, you don't go there five times a day to find out what happened in the last 24 hours. At best, you go there once in every 24 hours. This 24-hour period is an anachronism. It's a throwback to the days when they were printing, and they're not printing anymore. So if you took a step back and say, okay, we love news. Now, if we were free of economic constraints, what would news on the internet look like? And I think that they would have some ideas. I really do. I'm not making that up. I think that there are people at the AP that love news, and I think they would have some ideas about that. And then I'd say, okay, why don't you go implement those ideas, and let's see what happens when people actually use them. And then you learn, and you take what you learn, you throw that back in there, and some of those new things people will like, and others they won't, and that's how you bootstrap up a new environment for whatever it is when it's dealing with technology, and that's the way it's going to happen, Jay. It's all this stuff, in my opinion. Okay, all this, you know, fits and throws and let's charge or not charge. These are all side issues to the major question is what will it look like and how will it work? And I can't tell you what the UI is because there are no big bangs. That's not how it works. You start out with an idea, you try it out, you learn, and you go from there. And we haven't really begun the iteration. Now, I've thrown out some ideas there years ago. This River of News thing, I put that out in 1999. And that's, you know, 10 years ago now. And they have just begun to adopt that in the news industry. The BBC has a river of news. The New York Times has a very clandestine river of news. They're not really making anybody else aware of it, but they do have a river of news feed at the Times now. Well, it took them 10 years. It shouldn't have taken them 10 years. And it's mostly because they're still trying to hold on to their old models. At the same time, they're looking for the big bang, which, you know, this is not going to work. They need to have two threads, maybe one, and the one thread that's the existing thread is about to end for all of them. Okay, and so, and the new thread is nowhere near ready to carry the load. So that's the problem. That's where we have a problem right now.
I think part of the reason for this is that, almost all of the people working in the news industry now came into it and grew up in an environment where the cost to try was very high. And so you didn't just bootstrap things. You didn't iterate. That's not how you developed a newsroom or a news product. A new product in the news business was a new section, a sports magazine to add to your television magazine, you know? That's invention in news. And the idea of starting with something that doesn't exist, that we can't quite see, and doing kind of a skeleton version of it just so you can get some feedback and create another version, there really is no tradition of that at all. In the news industry, and that's part of the problem. And you'll notice that in the whole business model discussion, which gets very wearisome sometimes, there's an implicit assumption that we had this one business model that worked for a long time. It's now broken, and now we need another one, you know, like another solution. When most people who are looking carefully at it know that there isn't going to be one solution, that's a huge cultural adjustment for the firms involved, for the newsroom culture, and for individual journalists and leaders.
Well, I think that you didn't rise to the top in the news industry in the 1990s and earlier by being the kind of person who wanted to throw it all out and start over again. That wasn't the criteria for rising up the corporate ladder and be given more and more authority. Now that I have to disagree, though, that there is no tradition of that in the news industry, because the news industry has been through cycles like this before. I'm not immersed in the history. I imagine you've spent some time studying it, though, of the early days of television and radio and, maybe cable news and so forth, that these were they were all periods where the cost of changing course probably wasn't very high, because there hadn't been a lot of investment and there weren't a lot of people reading or following or listening to their programming, that they could actually change direction easily.
Well, there were periods of adaptation, and the history of the press is kind of markets and continually disrupting the business. So there have been periods of technological change before, but what there hasn't been before is this vast increase in the number of players and in participation in the news system. Mm-hmm. There really hasn't been any period analogous to that. And I think that's one of the very difficult things for a company like the AP to grapple with. I mean, in the way the AP was talking in this week, it's as if there aren't any other participants.
Yeah. You know?
And they are the news, you know? And even though they said that they weren't attacking Google or this isn't aimed at bloggers, there's something in the way that they were talking that kind of doesn't make room for anybody else. And I found that. Yeah. The other thing I found really strange was one of the vice presidents told the Politico, "We're not trying to be combative here." Yeah. And I just felt, what an insult that is to my intelligence. I mean, the chairman of the AP says, "We're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore, and we have a plan." And then the next day, the vice president says, "We're not trying to be combative." I mean, it just reeked of contempt and confusion to me. And I really have a hard time feeling any sympathy or empathy for them. I don't understand what they're doing. I think they're completely confused.
But how far is what they're doing from the way the other big players in news are responding to this challenge? I mean, they're maybe being more open and vocal about it, but there seemed to be a consensus amongst them that they have to do something, right?
Yes. I think your analysis that there is a need to show action is right on. And that is really the only explanation I can find that makes sense of the AP's recent moves, is that they're trying to demonstrate to one constituency or another that they're ready to act. Mm-hmm. And I do sense, over the last few weeks especially, during the time that we've been doing these podcasts, that there is a kind of hardening of the mood in the news business, and a conviction that they're going to have to start clamping down, closing down, charging, putting up walls, and the rank and file, as well as the leadership, is increasingly kind of desperate, yes, but but determined to show that it really is in charge of the situation and is not just going to let it drift. I think that we're much closer to going backwards to a more closed system now than we were a couple months ago.
Well, do you think that that's what the net result is going to be, or that, you know, play it out. So let's say the major news organizations, professional news organizations, do something over the next month or so, then do you see a vacuum being filled in any way by amateurs, by bloggers, by some elements of the news industry that might decide to take advantage of the new space that it opened up?
I don't see bloggers and citizen journalists filling it so much as there will be competitors who don't play. Mm-hmm. I find it impossible to believe that all the major players in the news industry will kind of get on the same page and act at the same time in cartel-like fashion. Mm-hmm. I think that there will be one or two, whether it's a Reuters or an NPR or a combination of them, that just won't play. And it's much more likely that they'll be the beneficiaries of it than some new army of citizen journalists.
I don't like the term citizen journalists, by the way.
Okay, bloggers, sources, you know, new players, new producers.
Because there's everybody that's a journalist is a citizen, you know. I mean, it almost is a condescending term in a way. It's like, I find it at least that way. I mean, you know, even the best reporter at the biggest news organization is a citizen, right? I mean, what does it say about
them?
Yeah. Say that they're a citizen?
I mean, you know, I feel on this question. I think it's hysterical the way people get all worked up over particular terms. To me, all terms, whether they're jargon or common sense terms, are useful for some things and don't cover other things. And it's like, if you don't like that term, let's think of another term. But I certainly understand what you mean by everyone's a citizen, and journalists hate the term citizen journalist for the same reason. They say, I'm a citizen.
They do?
But then
really?
Oh, sure. They always say that, yeah. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, if you ask them to behave as a citizen, they say, I'm a journalist. So, you know, they got you either way.
Yeah.
anyway, I don't see any prospect of the news industry making some sort of coordinated move. And I don't see them yet having a strategy. I see tremendous frustration, tremendous fear, and a kind of conviction that we've got to get tough, you know, because toughness will do it. Mm. And toughness divided by confusion is not a lovely result.
No, it reminds me of our last president a little bit.
Yeah.
How well did that work?
Didn't work out.
It didn't seem to work all that well, man.
Which leads me to a question I have for you.
Another question?
I've heard you say,
goodness.
Yeah, I've heard you say a number of times that you would love to work with the news industry, that you have in the past, and you would like to again, whether it's the New York Times, which we always talk about, but it could be the AP or others. And so I wanted to ask you, suppose a big news organization, let's say, let's not talk about the New York Times because we always pick out the New York Times, but let's say the Los Angeles Times or the San Francisco Chronicle came to you and said, Dave, you know, we've heard your cries.
Yeah, yeah.
We are in a situation here. We do need innovation. We would like to work with you, you know, as in a consultant basis or whatever. We want your ideas. We want to hear what you have for us. So how would that go? I mean, what kind of relationship would you have with a news organization?
It's sort of like call my bluff.
What would you do with that?
Well, I wouldn't just give them my ideas, and I wouldn't accept that as a, you know, as very likely to, you know, to succeed. What I would like actually is to do what we did with the New York Times in 2002. I had a meeting with Martin Niesenholtz, who was the CEO of New York Times Digital, and I asked for two things. I said, I want you guys to support RSS, and I want you to offer blogs to every person that you quote as a source in one of your stories. And so he didn't do the latter, and he didn't do the former either. What he did was he said, I'll give you access to our stream of stories. And they were being published in a proprietary form of XML. And you can do whatever you want to with them. And that was the kind of deal I liked. And so basically they really weren't paying a whole lot of attention to what we were doing, I think. I don't know. I can't tell you for sure because, of course, I wasn't on their side of this deal. I was only on mine. And so I don't think they really watched us all that closely or even really thought that what we were doing was all that significant. And so what I did was basically gradually brought them into RSS. First, we published their proprietary format and hooked that up to our product, Radio User Land, and then gradually transformed that into RSS 0.92 and then RSS 2.0. And we got two things out of it. Number one is, well, we got a standard in syndication, which led to a lot of really, I think, incredibly good things. And we also brought that flow of their content into this space for other people to do marvelous things with, and all kinds of great stuff did come out of that. And the ideas that that germinated out of that eventually have become, you know, things like Facebook and Twitter. I mean, you know, these are all part of the sequence of events that led to where we're at right now. So what I would say to them is, look, what I want is I want to start something new, right? I don't want to try to fit it in with the things that you're already doing. I don't want it to have any strategy taxes associated with that. That's a strategy tax is like a technology industry term. It comes from Microsoft, where each product group had to basically, some part of their product plan had to include helping Windows achieve domination over every other operating system, or help Internet Explorer achieve domination. So these were things that made each product less competitive in their own markets because they inherited the agendas of those other products. I don't want any of their strategy taxes. I don't want to try to preserve any of their existing business models or anything like that. What I want is to create a new brand that is related to their brand. And I don't think, honestly, the San Francisco Chronicle or the LA Times is a powerful enough entity in this market to pull it off. I want one of the best brands. I want one of the best brands in this industry, in that industry, so that people will pay attention to it and people will use it. Okay. And my goal would be very ambitious, Jay. I would be really trying to create that. Where do you go for the news now? What's new now is the slogan that I'm using. Okay. So it's like this.
What's new now?
Right. I think that's the impetus of news. I think that's what's on both sides of news. That's what the user of news I don't like the term consumer either because that's so passive. User is not a whole lot less passive, but at least it's not like somebody who's just eating, right? You know, the user of news is interested. You know, you wake up in the morning, what's the first question, you know, that comes on my mind is what's new now, right? And well, and then if I'm a reporter, I want to be the winner of that. I want to be the one that provides the what's new now feeling, right? And so and that's what I, as a, what I call myself as a media hacker, that's what I wanted. That's the most interesting problem in the space that I work in right now is that very top level of this, the site that makes your palms sweat, you know, that you think, I got to get there because I got to find out what's new now. So, yeah, and so actually one more thought is I think it's an amalgam right now of all of the leading news sources. I think it has to be all of them. I think it has to be AP, New York Times, Washington Post, Politico, Huffington Post, all of it integrated into one place.
You know, it strikes me that one way to get to that would be to focus on the heaviest users. That is, the people who are really news crazy in any domain.
Yep.
You know, like whether it's sports, mm-hmm. or finance,
yep.
or technology, or politics.
Or weather, or skiing, and or whatever.
Yeah, right. Where they have almost a kind of
yep.
fanatical need for news, because if you can build it for them, then it'll work, you know, at a sort of lower level rate for right. anyone else.
Yep.
And I know what you I've had this experience many times of going to the Washington Post, which after all is the you know, the political newspaper in America, and you cannot find any list of the headlines on the political news stories in the Washington Post. You cannot find a simple list of the latest political stories
right.
that the Washington Post is producing.
Right.
If you click on politics, which I do in searching for this,
yeah.
you get these pages with all kinds of things on them.
Right.
And some of them are from last week, and some of them are
yeah.
videos, and some are blogs, and some are news stories, and some are columns. And it's not that I object to a page that brings together a topic like that.
Right.
But I also want to know, like, what are the stories?
You know? Right.
What's new now? What's new now in the political news that the Washington Post has?
Right.
So I get that.
Jay, why did that happen? There must be people at the Washington Post who are as passionate about news as you and I are, right? Who got in the way? Who got in the way of this? They have to be sitting there like we're screaming right now, okay, in a very polite way, of course, that you know, there's got to be people on the other side. They're saying, you get out of my way so that I can get the news to the people who want it. There have to be people who
don't know the answer to
that. Or maybe those people left the Washington Post 5-10 years ago when the internet came along because they realized that the Washington Post wasn't going to do it.
No. For a while, the Washington Post under Jim Brady was actually pretty advanced on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure the answer to that, but I do have one sense of why people in journalism have been a little bit behind in this revolution. And it's a very prosaic fact that I think is overlooked by people looking on this scene. And that is, for people who worked in professional newsrooms, their access to information was very good for a very long time.
Right.
Meaning they had Nexus and Lexis. They had
right.
databases.
Right.
They had the ability, for example, to find out what was in their own paper
right.
going back, you know, months later. And these were tools that they used in their work.
Right.
And so if you imagine that they're using these tools and there's a continuity in their knowledge, meanwhile, in the world outside, users who've never had any access to that are experiencing a revolution in their access to information. But you don't necessarily know it if you can look up anything that's published on LexisNexis. You see what I mean?
Yeah, no,
and
it really takes
a huge act of imagination to understand what's really changed
right.
out there for the users because your situation hasn't changed that much.
Right.
And so the major way that journalists inside that environment took cognizance of the revolution in publishing information out there was through bloggers versus journalists, these new producers coming in and sort of claiming rights, you know, to enter the news stream. And who are these upstarts? And, you know, what do they know? And are they really qualified? Debates that have been going on, you know, for 8 or 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a factor. The weak tradition of innovation is a factor. The fact that a new product for 25, 30 years was a new section, that's a factor. The ease of making money in this industry for so long is a huge factor.
Yeah.
And like everyone says, the monopoly mindset.
Yes, and I'm agreeing with you in so many dimensions. I mean, I've seen that happen in computers. I mean, in the early days of the personal computer, there were a lot of great people who were really skilled at writing software that never understood the potential of the personal computer because they couldn't see past the fact that you couldn't do anything with them, because they had this wonderful world set up over in the mini computer or mainframe world, they looked over in the personal computer side of things and they said, well, those things are just toys, right? But they were going to develop in a completely different way with completely different rules and be much, much bigger than, and we already know the end result on this one. I mean, it's not like blogging versus professional journalists now because, well, we still don't actually know the outcome there, but we do know the outcome in this evolution of computers that, well, they hardly make mainframes anymore. I mean, they make them for some banking applications, but really almost everything these days, even the biggest computing centers are run off of microcomputers now. So, the verdict is in on that stuff. And it's totally understandable. And it's also understandable why we're getting this almost violent reaction on almost a personal level. You and I participated in one of these things. I don't want to mention any names or anything this week, where it really did seem personal. And I think it's just because they feel now that they have to be aware of what is going on in the blogosphere, and they still feel this very strong need to be able to dismiss it because it is a huge threat to what they want to do. But I think that is almost about to pass. This is sort of like the fever is almost at the point of breaking now. And
I think it's waning.
Yeah. Oh, you don't think breaking is waning?
Well, waning, breaking, almost yeah. ready to go. Yeah.
We're going to be sitting on the other side of this. Oh, wait, there was one other thing I wanted to say is that another thing that's contributing to this, for me at least, to the fact that this is a big moment, is that we elected Obama, and after the election, after the inauguration, I tried to listen to This Week with George Stephanopoulos today, and I got through about 15 minutes of it, and I couldn't listen to it anymore. It was like they had an admiral on there who was just never answering the question that Stephanopoulos asked. Then they spent 15 minutes debating this whole issue about piracy off Somalia, and I go, my God, this has nothing to do with anything in the world. And Krugman even said that at one point. He said, like in the big picture, this doesn't even like rate a mention. Why are we even talking about it? And after he finished and then they kept arguing about it, I said, this is my moment to turn this thing off. And I listened to some old rock and roll songs from the 80s or whatever. That I think that this, pardon the expression, the shit has finally hit the fan on the lack of relevance, the fake world that the news creates. It is not real. It doesn't have anything to do with what we do. And it's the combination of the electing of Obama, which means we've achieved, we achieved a major goal there. The other thing is we've got this horrible economic situation where we actually do really need to know what's going on in the world, and they're just simply not doing it. They're just not doing it. And so at this point, I don't have the passion for even arguing with them anymore. It's like, let's just get going,
Sign of the times on Meet the Press today, David Gregory had Adam Davidson and Alex Bloomberg, who were the two guys who were the reporters on the giant pool of money, the amazing NPR and This American Life show that explained the whole mortgage crisis. And even though they are journalists, so it's not like he's reaching way outside his comfort zone, you don't see people whose primary claim to standing in the journalism world is their ability to explain things that are talked about endlessly but nobody understands. But that's what they were there for. They were there as better explainers of the economic crisis than the nonstop chattering of business journalists, right? And so even though it's still well within the professional tribe, it's still a bit of a sign that maybe there's not so much confidence at the center. And I think the Sunday shows are really a very good example of people at the center who are watching their world kind of fly apart, and they don't necessarily know how to handle them. But I keep watching the news because, it just feels like my life.
Well, Jay, you're a professor of journalism, after all. I mean,
it's
like I still read the tech news, and even though I don't believe in what they're doing, because that's my professional, I feel a responsibility to stay current on what's going on there. If only because I need to be able to talk about this a year or two from now, saying, okay, this is what happened in that period. Because I think that the tech business, we don't talk very much about this, but the tech business is going through the same kind of upheaval right now that the news business is, which is, it's fine that we don't talk about it, by the way, because we're here talking about the news. And that's what, you know, we share as a common interest here. You know, believe it or not.
Well, I'm very interested in the tech business.
I know, and I appreciate
it. I just don't know as much about it.
Well, you're learning. And as I observed when we talked earlier today, I am delighted to see that the focus in your world is changing a little bit. So I like to see that. And then also to say that probably next week we'll have some more to talk about some of the tools that are coming online right now. Very excited about, I feel like we've sort of put together some of the pieces now and understand how, at least to some extent, this curatorship thing works. We're getting to another level here, and hopefully...
Somebody said something interesting to me on Twitter this week. A writer who has quite a following herself, she said something that, when I'm following Jay Rosen on Twitter, it feels like I'm getting an education for the cost of DSL. And it definitely is part of my goal, is journalism education in public.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
For anybody who wants to tune in. And one of the sources of hope for me is that somewhere out there, listening to me, listening to you, listening to some of the other people who are trying to puzzle this through on Twitter or on blogs, is a young person who doesn't have the same DNA, who doesn't have the blinders of have experience with this industry as it is, who's picking up the cues and it's going to come up with something. And that's the main source of hope for me right now, is like new generations, outsiders, somebody who's listening who we don't even know about in Eastern Europe or whatever, marginal people who may eventually be right at the center of things.
Yep. I said on Twitter, I do these like diatribe rant type streams of consciousness, that the power of the United States is that we're not elitist and we don't wait for the assholes at the top of the food chain to figure things out, because we empower the people at the ends of the food chain to actually solve the problems. And that's the power of the network that we're already using, Jay. It is, despite the fact that there are lots of things that skew it, it is basically a meritocracy. The ideas do circulate. As long as people are willing to promote ideas simply because they're interesting, as opposed to because they have some financial gain or whatever, because there's so much...
Well, there's plenty of those people.
There are. And I don't doubt for a second that process is already underway, because we're in that kind of a cycle now where, you know, when things really drop, when the bottom really drops, what comes right after that is a flowering of newness, of new ideas and experimentation. And that you know, I'm an optimist about that. I believe that the cycle works that way for a reason, and that there will be, this is the most innovative, how to put it, this is when we are the most innovative, is when we have almost nothing to lose. I mean, why not be innovative? What, mm-hmm. you know, there aren't that many people, you don't have to protect all that much. And so we get to try out some new ideas. And
that's true.
Yeah. So we're at 40 minutes now. So I think we should think about wrapping up. And I wanted to add just a couple of housekeeping notes here, Ruz. I thought the idea you had suggested in a phone conversation earlier today that we start adding a little bit of structure to this. And I think that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to have a place where we can like have an ongoing discussion during the week. Do you agree, or was that part of your thinking?
Maybe you should explain the idea. We could do it as a friend feed room. That'd be one example.
I see. Okay, we could try that. Yeah.
Or another. It doesn't matter.
No, matter to me. I think friend feed is a great way to approach this, and that's more up to you what you're comfortable with, because I can almost use almost anything. Where will we tell people where to go? Okay, so if you're listening to this podcast, just follow Jay on Twitter, JRosen_NYU, or follow me, Dave Weiner, DaveWiener, and between the both of us, we will make sure that the location of this room is well known. Does that sound like we've left enough of a seed there?
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
So, should we say goodnight, Jay?
I think we should. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll talk next week.
Awesome. Thanks, Jay.
Bye.